I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Dr. Sue Battle. Dr. Battle is a pediatrician and the medical advisor of the Advocacy Center for Crime Victims and Children. She explains why she chose the important and vital work of educating people about abuse, and also gives her thoughts on the best ways to battle the coronavirus. But first, it's the Residential Recap with Austin Hooper. Residential real estate expert Austin Hooper is in again this month for the Residential Recap, where he tells us what's been going on in housing. Hooper, we're here near the end of Q1 in 2020. What have you been seeing in the market in Waco?
Man, it's been a pretty crazy Q1. A lot of activity. Volume is up. Prices are up. It's been a very hot market to start off 2020.
So 180 existing homes were sold in January 2020, which was up almost 9% from January last year, although the average home sales price slipped a little bit compared to January 2019. It slipped by about 2%. So it seems like this is in line with what you told us last time when you were on the recap, that we might be heading more towards a seller's market.
I'd say that's true. And of course, when you're talking about January closings, those are homes that likely went under contract in December, maybe some in November, so still subject to that sort of holiday season slow down a bit. I wouldn't be surprised to see the sales price average up a little bit in February and March.
Ultimately, buying or selling a home is based on the relationship. It's your relationship with the broker. It's your relationship with the potential family that could be taking over what has been your home for the last 5 years, 10 years sometimes. So let's take this down to the more personal level. With the clients that you have that you're working with at AG Real Estate, what neighborhoods are they looking in? Are the fears of coronavirus playing into the numbers of homes or the prices of homes that people are looking at?
You know, I'd say we're still in a wait-and-see mode with that, as we are with a lot of the different aspects of our economy and what's going on out there right now. And it seems like, you know, every 24 hours that goes by, things are changing. I know yesterday, and for transparency, today is Tuesday, March 17th. Yesterday, March 16th, Monday, 20 new houses hit the MLS. And so, you know, there's still a healthy amount of activity out there. I know I've got a house hitting the market today, and I'm showing five or six homes to a couple that just moved to town, showing them some homes later this week. So, you know, my calendar hasn't changed, but I'll say it hasn't changed yet. And for me to say that things are going to slow down or not slow down would, you know, I'd be a fool to make that kind of prediction with how rapidly things are changing right now.
And the Greater Waco Economic Index that Carl Ingham puts together for the Waco Trib showed that there's, once again, as you mentioned on here multiple times, a real lack of houses in Waco proper that are in that $200,000 under range that are desirable for folks. That's a big need.
Absolutely. And I think especially in that sector of the market, that's where it's still very much a seller's market. And as soon as something that's relatively move-in ready under that 250K mark, as soon as it hits the market, it's under contract within a couple of days, probably multiple offers.
So we're still seeing multiple offer situations and houses hitting the market and quickly being taken off the market because it is so frothy in Waco.
Absolutely, and I will say, especially in that sub 250,000 mark, you know, things aren't moving quite that quickly and crazily for, you know, the threes and $400,000 mark.
And in the Woodway, Hewitt areas, are we still seeing the same amounts of growth?
Absolutely. You know, I just closed on a new construction home over in Creekside neighborhood yesterday. So many houses going up in the 76712, you know, the 84 corridor that we've talked about so much. So that's certainly going to help alleviate the lack of inventory and the quick moving volume in the Midway and McGregor areas. Doesn't help us out too much here in Waco proper. For those that want to be closer to downtown, we're still going to see, I think, that low inventory challenge.
Austin Hooper is on here every single month bringing us the Residential Recap, telling you what you need to know about housing in McLennan County. Hooper, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Austin. Stay safe.
Our commercial real estate expert on Downtown Depot is Greg Gleim, who is in again this month to tell us what is happening in Woodway. Greg, tell me a little bit about the outlook.
Yeah, the outlook is a 11-acre development out there, kind of a mixed-use development that incorporates retail and office. We've actually got some medical uses that are going in there. So it's all kind of developed and planned around this central amphitheater play area for kids. You know, there's a lot of neighborhoods, Woodway neighborhoods close by, and we get a lot of requests for people being able to drive their golf carts and having parking spaces for golf carts in the development. So it's really a neighborhood center that really focuses on families and kind of the demographic out there in that immediate area.
So this is a retail center that is in Woodway, catering to people who live in Woodway right there on Ritchie Road and Highway 84. So convenient and in the path of growth.
Yeah, it is. It's right in the path of growth. We spent two or three years ago, just driving that corridor, knowing the growth was coming out there and trying to pick the best site. And I think we got it right. I think time will tell, but it's shaping up nice. You got two buildings going up right now. Both of them, we've got numerous leases working on both of them. Exciting new prospects out there. And so, it's shaping up great right now. And I'm excited to see it all kind of unfold these next 2 months.
Most of the restaurant and retail options for people who live in Hewitt or Woodway are right there on Hewitt Drive. But the outlook is designed pretty differently. What did the designers and the developers learn from seeing this development pattern in Hewitt and Woodway? And how will it be different at the outlook?
Yeah, I think what I've noticed is, you know, people don't like getting on Hewitt Drive from 84. You've got a lot of schools down Hewitt Drive, a lot of stoplights, a lot of congestion. And so people will get off 84 to travel down the Hewitt Drive corridor. And that's what kept us on the 84 corridor for this project. If you took a line from the exit of Hewitt Drive to the Outlook, it's about the same distance as Hewitt Drive to George's over in the West Rock Center. So it's not that much further down than what people are used to getting off. And obviously there's a lot of people that frequent George's out there. So it's just another good option. I think it's a really good location to put more retail on the ground out there in an area where there's really limited spots to develop.
That's going to be a terrific multi-use space in Woodway. And there's another multi-use space that is going to be coming downtown. This is the Riverfront development. It's been talked about for many months and, in fact, years. And they now have a development target date in sight. Who knows how the coronavirus will change the timeline here. But what are your thoughts on this Riverfront development?
You know, I love it. There's so many projects in the pipeline for downtown. And density is one of the things that always comes up. And this is a dense development. And some of the other projects are dense developments. And so there is a whole lot of positive. I'm getting reports and hearing rumors that it's real right now, that it is on the horizon. It's on a short horizon. And I think we'll see it by the end of the year. I really think we'll see progress down there.
And one of the proposed pieces of icing on top of this Riverfront cake is the possibility of a Baylor basketball arena being in downtown as part of this Riverfront development, right there where Clifton Robinson Tower is. What would an arena like that do for downtown, and what would it do for Waco?
Yeah, I think it's a game changer. I think that's such a great use of space downtown. It not only does it incorporate Baylor and downtown Waco, which everybody's been trying to do, it's very similar to what the new football stadium did, McLean Stadium, and bringing it real close to downtown right there on the river. It's a setting that not many cities in the country, let alone universities in the country, have the ability to do, put their main arena in the downtown on a river. And it's a unique opportunity for us to take advantage of right now.
The award-winning commercial realtor Greg Gleim joins us here every month on Downtown Depot. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm now joined in studio by Dr. Sue Battle. Dr. Battle is a pediatrician locally and the medical advisor for the Advocacy Center. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your Waco history.
So I grew up in Austin, and then we came as a family to Waco in 2005. My husband's job brought him here. He's also a physician. And so when I moved here in 2005, I took some time off, had my second child here in Waco, and then did some community involvement, was on some boards of organizations, nonprofits, things like that. And then I went back to work part-time in 2009 at Baylor Scott & White Pediatrics. And I was on the board of directors at the Advocacy Center for Crime Victims and Children between 2008 and 2012. And then I've kind of changed over to working in the nonprofit world and doing kind of prevention and education and advocacy for child sexual abuse. So that's my thing here.
When you first discovered in the mid-2000s that you were going to be moving to Waco, especially as someone who's from Austin,
yes,
went to Westlake High School,
yep,
I can't imagine Waco was at the top of the list of where you wanted to move. What was your thinking?
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because you're right. When we were looking for places for my husband to find a job, we originally thought we were going to go back to Austin because we both grew up there, went to Westlake High School, went to UT. The job opportunities there for his practice, he's in orthopedic surgery, it was pretty saturated in Austin. So he actually took a job in San Marcos because we thought, okay, well, that's close. San Marcos is really pretty too, and we can be close to family. And he had interviewed here in Waco and actually loved the job here. And truth be told, I was kind of like, no, I'm not sure about Waco.
Just based on reputation?
Just based on growing up in Austin, Waco was where we stopped to get gas on the way to Dallas.
It was the potty break.
Yeah. So, but he thought over and over again, and he said, well, you know what? I really did like the job in Waco and the practice there and the group. It was Waco Orthopedic. And so he came back for a second look. I came back with him, and we are so glad we ended up here. So glad we ended up here. We've loved it. So, you know, it's great for families, communities. The sense of community is, you can't find that anywhere else, really. And the education system that we have here, we go to public schools, we go to Midway ISD, and the job opportunity was wonderful. And so we are so glad we decided to come here instead of San Marcos.
One of the first guests that I had on Downtown Depot was Taina Maya.
Oh, yes.
Who is very involved with the Advocacy Center.
I love Taina.
And if you haven't attended the Mardi Gras ball, or if you haven't needed to use the services at the Advocacy Center, listeners might not be aware of what this organization does for people in McLennan County.
Right.
Can you explain a little bit about
that? Sure. I hope you haven't had to have our services here at the Advocacy Center for Crime Victims and Children, but it is a nonprofit, and we serve all victims of crime. That's men, women, and children. And there's three different parts of the Advocacy Center. One is the Children's Advocacy Center. That's the part that I'm in, and we do forensic interviews, medical exams, and case management. And then we have the Victim Center. That's where we do counseling, the hotline, the case management there as well. And then we have Prevention and Education Division. And that's where we have great educators that are going out and talking to school districts, organizations, and educating them and trying to change behaviors and attitudes about crime and sexual violence. So that's what the Advocacy Center is. My job specifically at the Advocacy Center is to do medical exams on children who have made a delayed outcry of child sexual abuse. And so that would be any child up to the age of 18 or developmentally delayed adults. I would do an exam on those people who have made an outcry of sexual abuse or assault that has happened more than 4 or 5 days ago. So if they've had something happen to them that's a sexual crime that happened in the last 4 or 5 days, they would have to go to the emergency room and do what's commonly known as a rape kit or a SANE kit. And those are specially trained nurses that would do those exams in the emergency rooms. And then as the medical advisor, I have to oversee those exams and make sure that we do everything by protocol and make sure those are done correctly medically.
I'm going to ask you to brag on yourself, which might make you uncomfortable. But if someone else were talking about you, maybe think about it in that context.
Okay.
What would they say are the attributes that you have that make you so qualified and so beloved in this role?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. So in my role as the medical advisor at the Advocacy Center and in my job as the child sexual abuse examiner there, I have a special skill set. First of all, I'm a pediatrician. And so I guess by nature, hopefully, I'm very comfortable around children and put them at ease. That's what I've been told. And that's just what I love to do. I feel very comfortable around children. I feel very comfortable explaining things to adults who are bringing in their children. And I think I have a way of communicating well with children and adults alike about how to explain things to them that they understand without freaking them out or making them panic, but understanding everything about what their child's about to go through with an exam with me. On the other side of my job with Camp Careful and what I love to do in Camp Careful in the community, again, I think people appreciate the fact that I have a medical and professional background and experience. And then I also have a way of communicating to children about how to protect themselves without scaring them and without putting parents in a freak out mode or a panic mode or a paranoia mode. I have a way, I think, of explaining to children and parents how to protect themselves without making it seem like they have something they need to worry about. So it's a different – I've always been told that people trust my word because I'm a pediatrician and because I have the job that I have, that they understand that I have seen all the things that I talk about and I have seen ways that children handle it, how they can cope with it, and ways to explain it to parents and children alike. So I think there's something – about my specific skill set that is unique in Waco and in the surrounding communities. I mean, I'm the only medical examiner and we in the six surrounding counties, that do what I do. And so that helps, I think, people think, okay, well, Dr. Battle is the expert on this, at least in this area. And she's approachable and doesn't make things scary for children. And so I think that's really important. We don't want to scare our children and our parents. We just want to educate them.
I mean, if you scare them too much, then they can't listen.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's important when discussing nuanced topics like this to make sure that the information that we're putting out is developmentally appropriate.
Yes.
I know that's a big clarion call for you with Camp Careful. At what age are kids too young to be hearing this? Or is there such a thing as too young? Is this something we should be introducing to kids?
Yeah. So when I started Camp Careful, it was when my own son was, I think, 3 or 4 years old. I started Camp Careful 12 years ago. He's now 16. And so, no, I don't think there's an age that is too young to introduce topics about body safety and body awareness. So when I have Camp Careful, it started in the 3 to 6 year old age group. And when I do classes for 3 to 6 year olds, I think a lot of adults, you know, I have really ramped up classes and assemblies at schools. And so smaller school districts or people who are not familiar with me and Camp Careful will ask, well, how are you possibly going to be able to talk about body parts and child sexual abuse to a 3-year-old? Like, how would you do that? And I tell administrators and adults, I'm not talking about child sexual abuse to the children. What I'm talking to them about is safety and protection. And the way I introduce that developmentally appropriately is with the 3 to 6 year olds, I say, hey, let's talk about how your parents keep you safe crossing the road. Tell me how your parents keep you safe crossing the road. And they tell me, you know, you have to hold hands, you have to look both ways. And so we start off with normal safety things. And when I introduce it that way, the kids understand, oh, yeah, we've talked about holding hands crossing the roads. We've talked about how to stay safe in the kitchen. We've talked about how to stay safe around strangers. And we start with those normal conversations. And then I start into, okay, well, I'm a pediatrician, so I take care of children's bodies. Let's talk about our body parts. And so then I talk about normal, you know, I have them name body parts, eyes, ears, nose, throat. And then I go into private parts and I ask them to name it. And so
this is the anatomically correct.
Yeah. And I do Camp Careful with parents present because I want parents to understand what I'm teaching their children so that they can bring that home. So when I tell kids, you know, I point to my eyes, ears, nose, and throat, and they're yelling out those appropriate names, obviously. And then when I point to my breasts, they all sit there and get very quiet. The 3 to 6 year old class gets really quiet. The 7 to 12 year old class gets giggly. And so, again, that's very age appropriate response to those things. But I tell them, okay, these are called breasts. And then I go over private part names and I say, this is penis, this is vagina, this is your buttocks or bottom. And so I teach them it's okay to know these names and these parts because it's just another part of the body. And we need to make sure that we understand these parts and all the names because if something happens to your nose or your elbow or your knee or your breast, you have to be able to tell your mom or dad and you have to be able to tell the doctor. And so I haven't mentioned the words child sexual abuse at all. And so I make the parents also say those words out loud and I make the kids turn around and look at their parents and see that they also understand that those are not words that you have to be worried about saying out loud. Then I say, okay, well, those parts that are covered by your bathing suit are private parts. So what does private mean? And so that's how we start introducing the topic of private parts are private, and anything that's covered by your bathing suit is private, and those parts should not be looked at and touched by anybody else. And so I explained to parents then, this is a really good way to teach your kids that message of safety. When you're giving them a bath, say, okay, here's your elbow. You got to keep your elbows clean. You got to wash your knees. This is your private part. This is called a vagina or a penis. We got to keep those parts private. That means nobody's supposed to look at this and nobody's supposed to touch that. That takes 10 seconds. And when you say it in a way that's in a appropriate manner, and you're teaching them this is a normal safety rule, then they learn it just like they learned all the other safety rules you've taught your kids since they were two. And it wasn't in a scary way. They don't understand exactly what we're talking about is child sexual abuse, but they understand, oh, that's a private part. I keep that private. And that becomes a normal conversation and a normal way to keep your child safe.
You're hearing from Dr. Sue Battle. She is the medical advisor for the Advocacy Center for Crimes and Children. Crime victims and children, excuse me. When you were talking earlier about the way that you communicate builds a trust, mm-hmm. I'm feeling that right now. I feel so much more at ease hearing
good.
This
yeah,
and
great.
Thinking about my almost 2-year-old daughter and,
yes.
and the conversations that we have. But it's funny when you're talking about this should be part of your normal discussion.
Yes.
It's just when you normalize it, it's not as weird. And I
yes.
think about that all the time with my daughter where I talk to her largely like she's a friend of mine rather than Goo Goo Gaga
mm-hmm.
or
yep.
do you want a baba?
Right.
Because I want her to talk like a normal human. I don't
yes.
want her to talk
yes.
like a baby. And, you know, you're only as good as the information that comes out of you is only as good as the information that comes in you.
Absolutely.
So you have to give people the tools and the resources to discuss these things
that's
with
absolutely.
Their own families.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do is give the parents the tools. And again, that's why I have parents come to Camp Careful, because I want to give them the tools to have these conversations in a normal and easy, laid back way so that they can understand how to talk to their kids about this and that their kids can understand. This is something that I talk to my parents about so that if something happens, I'm completely comfortable talking to my parents about it or a doctor or a counselor or a teacher or somebody else that I trust because I know that this was a safety rule. And then if you start teaching at a young age that nobody's supposed to touch your private parts, and then as they start to get to be 7 to 12 years old and doing independent activities when they're going to sports and clubs and things like that, they have learned, again, the safety rules and to know that they can understand that they can tell their parents about anything that's going on that's inappropriate or makes them feel uneasy. And then in that older group, I teach them they're the boss of their bodies. And at the 7 to 12-year-old age group class, I tell parents, okay, now we have to back up what we've taught our kids, that they're the boss of their bodies. So when we have Thanksgiving or family get-togethers or reunions, don't tell your kid you have to go hug grandma or you have to go hug your uncle. And if they don't like it, we need to back them up. Because if you're teaching your child, they are obligated to give their body in some manner to somebody else because they're family or because they're somebody that you as the parent loves or trusts or doesn't want to hurt their feelings, then they learn as a young child that their body is not their own to control. And that is a horrible message to send to children. Because when you look at the statistics of child sexual abuse, it's 90% of the time someone you or your child knows and trusts. 30 to 35% of the time it's family. So we cannot make exceptions to the rule of you are supposed to go do that, you're supposed to go hug them, you're supposed to let them touch you because they're family. We can't say that. So when you think about the statistics of it is someone you know and trust, we can't make the rule of, okay, go hug grandma. Even though we know grandma's not going to be doing something wrong, if your child doesn't like, you know, sloppy kisses on the cheek or inappropriate hugs or, you know, something that just makes them feel uneasy, a perfect example would be if my preteen son said to me, and he did when he was 12, he said, Mom, stop hugging me in public. I don't like it. I have to back that up because I've taught him you're the boss of your body. So I wasn't doing anything wrong. He knew I wasn't doing anything wrong, but he said, I don't like hugs in public anymore. And so I have to back that up. And so I don't make him take my hugs in public. And so we have to be very clear about the message with children that they are the boss of their bodies. And then if something were to happen with their private parts specifically, they can know, okay, my parents have always said, I'm the boss of my body. That makes me feel uncomfortable when someone's touching me that way or hugging me that way or doing something that I don't like, and I have to be able to tell them no, and we have to back that up.
I'm feeling so elated by the way that you've reframed this, mm-hmm. which is typically a really scary topic,
mm-hmm.
but and kids these days, you know, they feel so little agency. They're not even allowed to ride their own bike to school anymore in America, and you have told these kids you are the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that they can take that feeling of empowerment, and that just opens up worlds for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then think about how that will translate if you have a son or a daughter who's a teenager and starts getting into relationships. And so if you have a teenage daughter, like I have a teenage son, and I will have I do now have a 13-year-old daughter. They're going to start being in relationships now. And I want to teach my son, as the one that's older right now, if you are in a relationship with a girl and she gives you an uneasy feeling, if you try to hold her hand even, you have to be able to recognize when somebody doesn't like something as simple as a handhold. And as a girl, you have to be able to recognize that if you don't want someone to hold your hand, speak up and know that you don't have to do it just because you think that's expected of you. So it doesn't matter if we're talking about a boy in a relationship or a girl in a relationship. We have to teach them to understand and respect each other's boundaries and know that you are in charge of your own body.
Thousands of people have attended Camp Careful, men, women, yes, children. I would encourage everyone to check out Camp Careful and be sure to educate your kids about this because it is important, and they don't know what you don't tell them, or you're too afraid to tell them. So if it's too difficult for you to have those conversations, Dr. Battle is obviously very qualified and competent in that area. But the work that you do is inherently so heavy. Where are the points of levity in your life? How do you stay as bubbly and happy as you are?
People do say that I'm very bubbly despite my job and what I do. There's lots of things. I go exercise. I have great friendships and a tribe, as people say all the time these days. I have wonderful ways to get an outlet. Reading, running, exercising, those are ways that I make sure I stay sane.
I'm going to get you out of here on this. We have this episode airing on Friday, March 20th. The situation with coronavirus is very fluid. For anyone who's in Waco who maybe isn't taking this seriously or hasn't heard it from a doctor that they trust, so they don't care, trust Dr. Battle. Here we are with you. And I know you're not an epidemiologist, but can you explain a little bit about the seriousness of this and what we all as Wacoans can be doing?
Yes, and I think this morning City of Waco had another press conference and they are shutting down restaurants for in-dining because we're trying to, again, go along with the national crisis that is going on right now and trying to limit social interaction. So the big things that I would say are this is a real crisis. I think people are reacting in ways that aren't necessarily appropriate, like hoarding toilet paper and stockpiling on canned goods. We need to be prepared and we need to be practical. And the practical things to do are limit social interaction, make sure you are having frequent hand washing, limiting close contact, which would mean within 6 feet of each other, and doing what we can to minimize the exposure to other people. So I know people might be saying, well, I'm fine, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm not going to get major complications if I were to catch coronavirus. That's true. But what we need to assume now is that it is in our community. We are just now ramping up testing. So just yesterday, 24 hours ago, there were 3,800 cases in the United States. This morning, on the exact same website that I'm checking, it is 5,002. So in one day, because we've increased testing, we are now going to be seeing a lot more positive cases. We have to assume people around us have coronavirus, so we have to try to limit exposure to other people because there are high-risk populations that we need to protect.
Dr. Sue Battle is a pediatrician and the medical advisor for the Advocacy Center for Crime Victims and Children. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Dr. Sue Battle, Austin Hooper, Greg Gleim, and you for tuning in to Downtown Depot here on Waco Public Radio. Find me on Instagram and Facebook at Waco Business News for updates in between shows, and tune back in to 103.3 on the third Friday of March for another fresh episode. I'm your host, Austin Meek, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.